Well, it's time now for Changing Australia. I've got someone very special that you're about to meet. He has a Sydney ferry named after him. He's claimed world records and has been praised by politicians on both sides of the table. He's even been called a national treasure. In a career spanning more than half a century, Scientia Professor Martin Green has revolutionised solar technology development in Australia and the world. His work is now used in about 90% of solar panels installed worldwide, while his students have gone on to play crucial roles in the solar manufacturing industry in Asia to help drive down the cost of solar cell technology. Professor Martin Green is the founding director of the Australian Centre for Advanced Photovoltaics at the University of New South Wales and joins me now. Martin, a very warm welcome to Changing Australia.
Oh, thank you very much, Sally.
The Energy Minister, Chris Bowen, has likened you to the Elvis or Frank Sinatra of solar power. Others have referred to you as the godfather of modern solar power. How did you begin in this particular field?
Well, I did engineering at University of Queensland and I got interested in microelectronics. So, you know, like 50 years ago, that was a really hot topic. And then I found out in the 70s I could apply the skills that I'd learnt in microelectronics to solar energy, and I've been working in that field ever since.
How different are the solar panels from the 1970s compared to what we have on rooftops and elsewhere now, Martin?
Yes, the technology hasn't changed all that much. The cells still use silicon, the same material that is used in microelectronics, but the performance of the cells has improved enormously. So the modules available, the performance has gone up at least three times in the amount of power you get out for a given area, you know, over that period.
And what is it that has made those panels more effective?
Yeah, well, it's largely the work that we've done. You know, we were concentrating on improving that ratio, the efficiency of the module, the ratio of the electrical energy you get out to the sunlight that's falling on it. And we just kept identifying what was limiting the performance of the cell and then working hard to eliminate that. And then another barrier would loom and we'd address that one sequentially. So we just sort of iterative steps, we gradually pushed things up. So we made about a 50% relative improvement in the performance of the cells, and they've all been transferred into production now.
Often with great advances, it involves some thinking outside the box and looking at problems a bit differently. Has that been part of this movement of tech?
Yeah, I guess we've introduced a number of different ideas and cell structures, the way you actually build the cell into the silicon material. So, yeah, it has required a lot of innovative steps and patents and so on along the way.
You and your team were making breakthroughs, but was it an easy environment to operate in initially? What kind of equipment were you able to get your hands on in the very early days?
Yes, we had a very distinct developmental path. So we were, you know, lacking resources compared to the groups we were competing against, mainly in the USA, Japan and Europe. So we did everything on a shoestring. So the first bit of gear we got, we rescued from a scrap heap from AWA Microelectronics was working in a similar area here in Australia, and they'd thrown something out, and that was our first bit of substantial gear. And so we developed skills in buying secondhand equipment, you know, left over from the microelectronics industry, particularly in the USA. And we had a team of people that could resuscitate that and get it going and working under Australian conditions. And that proved very useful in the development of the industry because we transferred those skills to setting up manufacturing very inexpensively in Asia.
And what do we know about those figures back in those early days as to the rough percentage of Australian homes that would have had a solar panel on the roof back in the 70s or 80s, Martin?
Back in the 70s or 80s, there'd be virtually none. The panels were extremely expensive. They only used them on spacecraft virtually, and sort of small navigational aids and things like that were alternative sources of power, were just not very viable. But the cost has come down enormously, like at least 1,000 times since that era.
So it's incredible.
Yeah, there'd be virtually none. There might have been one person who had one panel on their roof in the 70s, but It didn't really start happening until the end of the 90s. I guess the panels started getting cheap enough that people could afford them for homes.
Let's get into some of the technical terms here. You and your team eventually created the tech that's now in 9 out of every 10 solar panels around the world. It's the passivated emitter and rear cell technology known as PERC. In non-engineering terms, what is it? How does it work?
Yeah, the emitter is just the top of the cell and the rear is the back of the cell. So we fixed up the top and the back of the cells, you know, by developing techniques that reduce their electronic activity. So we found that those surfaces were what were limiting the performance of the cells when we started looking at improving the performance. So we put a lot of effort into reducing their electronic activity so they didn't drag down the whole cell performance. So, you know, that term, the PERC, you know, just captures that stream of activity.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. My guest today is Professor Martin Green, who's been instrumental in the development of solar energy technology. Martin, you were at the cutting edge of research and streaked ahead, even ahead of NASA, to claim the world record for cell efficiency. Was it an exciting time in some of these foundational years?
Yeah, no, it was really exciting. So we set our first world record back in 1983 and we held it almost without any interruption until 2014. So that was really very exciting. So every time you got a record, Brady had a bottle of champagne in the lab and everyone celebrated. And, you know, like trying to keep ahead of the rest of the world was what motivated you to put in the hard yards to make the next improvement.
What's the relationship been like between the research aspect of this and commercialising it? Has the research team, I don't mean in a personal way, but the research team and the university been adequately rewarded for the technology that it's developed?
Yes, I think so. You know, like UNSW now is rated number 19 university in the world in one of the rating schemes. And, you know, a lot of that was attributed to the international recognition of our work in solar. So that, you know, it's been great feedback to the university in that, you know, the high rating means more students and higher prestige for the university and so on. But we've done licensing over the years. So BP Solar was our best known licensee, but they licensed the technology from us from about 1992 to 2006 when they got out of the business. But we've had rewards to the university, but I think the main rewards has been the development of low cost solar, so that we now have a cheap option for displacing fossil fuel use.
I guess the question that a lot of people would have, Martin, is how much further can these improvements grow? How much cheaper and how much more efficient can solar energy become?
Yes, well, the International Energy Agency says solar now is producing some of the cheapest electricity in history. So it's already cheap, but the really exciting thing is there's still plenty of scope for further improvement. So that's what we're working on now at the university, trying to squeeze extra performance out of the silicon cells. And then if you start stacking cells of different materials on top of one another, you can get another big jump in performance. So just finding a material that's as good as silicon to stack on it is a real research challenge at the moment.
Things are really at the forefront here. How do you reflect on the use of solar in the developing world? I know reporting around Africa, it's really become something that you can expect to see in every village at the market. There'll be fruit and vegetables sold, maybe a bit of soft drink, maybe a shebeen or bar, and then there'll be a solar shop in pretty much every village. Has it changed at that end of the scale much as well?
Yes, you may need just small scale uses. Mm. So one of my colleagues working in Uganda sent back some footage from Gulu, a provincial town
up
there.
North.
And the whole street was just lined with shops selling solar modules.
That's right, yeah.
So it's really taken off on a small scale there. But, Pakistan's been quite noticeable in that, over recent years, they've gone from virtually no solar use to it now being one of the major sources of energy or electricity in the country. And that just happened through, a person-driven initiative. It's just been the general population realizing that this provides a cheap way of them generating the electricity reliably. So, it's happening quite quickly in some of the countries, some of the poorer countries of the world.
What's it like for you driving around neighbourhoods now when you see so much solar on rooftops these days?
Yeah, no, it's really, really quite rewarding. I guess, if you bought a solar panel since about 2016, it's going to be technology that was originally developed at the University of New South Wales that is being used. So it's really quite rewarding seeing the strong use of the technology. Australia is going to generate about 23% of its total electricity supply from solar this year, but that number is growing very quickly. So I think, by the early 2030s, we'll be generating over half our electricity from these solar panels, which will be really very rewarding to see that happen.
That pace and scale of improvement, those exponential period earlier on in this research, is there still more of that ahead, or do you think that the improvement will slow somewhat?
Yes, well, we've still got this jump to this stack cell idea, so that'll give a big jump in performance. So the silicon cells themselves are running into a fundamental barrier in how far they can go. So they're limited to about 30% energy conversion efficiency, but if you start stacking a cell on top of the silicon cell, you can get up to over 40%. We hold the world record at 40.6%, but unfortunately it's with a technology that's not very practical in that it's very expensive. But it just sort of shows that those type of efficiencies are available if you can find the right materials to do it cheaply.
Do you think we're going to see more of these solar farms in the regional areas, Martin?
Yes, that's been a big growth area. Most of the electricity generation from solar in Australia occurs from private rooftops. And that's unique worldwide to have such a large percentage of solar generated by private citizens. But the number of large installations going out in, the western areas of the state, for example, are really growing very quickly. So that'll be where a lot of growth will be occurring in the future.
How do you see Australia's position more broadly? Sometimes it feels as if we are lacking in confidence of our ability to develop innovative technology, to license it, to get in that process, that it's a battle we're not very good at doing all of that. How do you see it? Do you have more optimism than that, Martin?
Yes, yeah, for solar, Australia is actually the largest user of solar per capita worldwide, so we're leading the world in a certain respect. And, with over 20% of our electricity now coming from solar, it faces challenges in the way the grid operates, because it was never designed to have electricity being fed in from all its corners. So we're sort of leading the world in development of technology to adapt to large amounts of solar, supplying electricity. So there's a lot of good work occurring in that area. And I think we'll sort of lead the world in that we're one of the biggest economies, that we're over 20% of electricity is actually being generated from solar. So there's countries with a lot more, but they're generally, a lot smaller GDPs and so on than Australia.
Martin, it's been so interesting to talk to you about the journey for this technology and what may lay ahead as well. Thank you so much for making some time to speak to Changing Australia this morning.
Thank you, Sally. Good talking to you.
Scientia Professor Martin Green is the founder and inaugural director of the Australian Centre for Advanced Photovoltaics at the University of New South Wales. We've been getting some text messages in, a bit of fan mail from Martin as well, for those who are very, very much wedded to solar.